Coming to you live from deep within the Earth's molten core, my name's Tom, and with me as always is a pile of babies in a trench coat pretending to be a full-grown man, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 108, Honor of the Elf King. Welcome back once again, dear listeners. My name is Tom. With me is my colleague here.
I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're here with Mildly Alarming Podcast.
I'd like to welcome our horse listeners as well as our deer listeners.
But not our caribou listeners. You know what you did.
And it was gross.
It was disgusting.
And borderline illegal.
Borderline nothing.
Depends on your location.
I suppose, yeah. On which borderline you are one side or the other.
Anyway, this is episode 100 and something.
108.
And today, we're going to be talking about a lot of crap. Maybe. We're a couple of amateur game designers and general just super awesome people that you all should love and give your money to. And we're trying this podcast thing, and hopefully you guys will like it. So our first topic of deeply, deeply important and meaningful discussion is from Cracked.com.
Cracked.com did not pay us to advertise them on our podcast. But no, I was reading one of their articles the other day, as I want to do when I should probably be doing almost anything else. But I was reading it, and it was about video game addiction and how we should take it seriously. I think that was actually the title of the article. We'll include it in the description of the podcast, I'm sure. But I was reading along on it, and it was interesting. Got me thinking about games and why we play them and why I just tapped on my glass and what was probably incredibly loud.
It wasn't that bad. It's 5 Ways Video Game Addiction is Ruining Gaming was the title of the article. Thanks, Cracked.com.
Seriously, they're not our sponsor.
Yet.
But I was reading it, and it was interesting. Got me thinking about games and why we play them and why we make them and all that. What was really interesting to me is how much it resonated with my own experiences in basically completely abandoning virtually all forms of electronic gaming that somebody else didn't pay for and make me play at their house.
Mm-hmm.
The community just got so completely septic in those things. Like, even if you were only playing single player games and you were only, you know, doing your Zeldas and your Marios and whatnot, if you went online and tried to find information about them or find a group of like-minded people to say, hey, you remember that one part where the thing happened? That was pretty cool, right? You would just get into these endless nonsensical flame wars of just the most vile garbage would be sprayed upon you from their purulent mouths.
Some people are into that.
Some people are, but not me so much.
No.
With the purulence and the spewing.
Well, it's interesting to me because I think you're more susceptible to that than I am for a few reasons. One of them is that you actually put yourself in the gaming situations where those things will happen. So, for instance, League of Legends. I only ever played with you, and you burned out on League of Legends because of all the dirtbags playing League of Legends. Not all of you. I know, hopefully, if we ever have listeners, they will, some of them, maybe be League of Legends players. Please don't go anywhere. We love you.
I do not.
But there are those people. Yeah, Tom gave up on it entirely, so I probably only played a total of 10 or 15 games of League of Legends ever. Because I only played when Tom did, and Tom burned out, and he got sick of all the people who are just vitriolic. What do they call it? Toxic is their go-to word. You can actually get banned, I think, for being toxic on League of Legends. I don't I don't play those games on my own, so I don't get exposed to it so much.
Yeah, and it's definitely the case. If you're playing on your own, you're playing what Fallout was big for you for a long time. You're playing playing those by yourself or with one other person who's in the room with you. Mm-hmm. You don't run into that nonsense, and if you're not participating at all in the gaming community, you don't run into it. But man, you take one step out in there and you're just like, holy crap, why is everyone so awful to each other all the time, constantly?
Well, I thought it was interesting because I was trying to see if I should apply any of these video game addiction pointers here from this thing as I was reading through the article. And I'll just run them off real quick without spoiling all of the hilarious Cracked.com jokes from www.cracked.com. Gaming addiction is an addiction to feeling powerful, is a point they discuss. We don't want to accept that games are just a recreation.
Recreation.
Oh, yeah. No, well, yeah, you're right. I read it as recreation, and I was confused by that point.
Well, it's an easy mistake to make because they are spelled the same way.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
In fact, there's no article, so it is, in fact, obviously recreation and not recreation. We don't want to accept that games are just recreation. Addicts aren't even enjoying games anymore because they're seeking things that an addict seeks so much out of a game that they're not looking for the just typical, hey, this is a fun story that I'm playing through. We suppress the needs that games don't satisfy. There's a beautiful picture at the top of this section of two zebras about to commit some sort of act. You can find yourself. And we're begging to be mocked, which perpetuates the cycle. And I'm sitting here going, like, especially when they're talking about what the difference is between being addicted to a video game and, like, getting to the point where you're just playing it and you're not even really enjoying it anymore, and maybe there are things that you previously enjoyed out of life that the game doesn't give you that you ignore. And maybe I'm fooling myself, but I was pleased to see that, like, even in my, you know, however many hundreds of hours I put into Fallout 3, I don't think I reached that point. Like, I enjoyed those games, and I didn't feel like I was ruining other aspects of my life in order to do so. So check that one off for me. Dr. Johannes says I'm not addicted to video games.
And Dr. Johannes can be trusted. He's a doctor.
Of science.
Where was I going with this? Oh, right, yeah, the septic community. Yeah, it's terrible. But, you know, and that was one of the things that kind of drove me away from it, but once I stopped playing, once I said, you know, these are my scant leisure hours, and this sort of shift mainly occurred when I was living alone in a cabin in rural Wisconsin. So if that gives you any insight into my state of mind at the time, things were getting weird.
Your life led up to a choice to live alone in a cabin in Wisconsin with a big spider.
I defend that choice. The spider bears, that story bears telling.
It does.
Okay, so I get to my cabin in Wisconsin. I've driven out there from Michigan to Wisconsin. We're from Michigan. I think that's a reasonable thing to reveal about ourselves. Both of us wear mittens all the time. But I get there, I get to my cabin in Wisconsin. I tell it like it's a log cabin. It's not. It's at the north end of this lake that I lived on, and it's a nice little cabin like hunters would go to. It's like a little cluster of cabins that this guy owns on his property. Nice place. Not super rustic. It had running water and all that. But I get there at any rate. And I go in. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm at my new job in Wisconsin. I'm going to do the thing. It's going to be great. And I walk in. And I walk into the bathroom. And there's a big spider in the sink. So I go, ha, I'm going to send a picture of this spider to my very dear friend Johannes. And I will tell him that I have a roommate. Because that will be a funny joke. Height of comedy. So I do. And he texts me back, that is a brown recluse spider. To which I reply, I'm glad it didn't bite me when I picked it up and took it outside.
Somehow, how many years later?
This would have been 2011. Fall semester 2011.
So, not quite 4 years later, Tom is still alive. He has not been murdered by any sort of bug, animal, human, or semi-conscious machine. So that's a miracle, and perhaps proof of the existence of God?
Well, it's proof of at least the existence of a force in the universe that finds it entertaining enough that I remain alive.
Fair enough.
You know, it might be some sort of malicious deity tormenting you, or it could be a deity that is just like, look at that jackass.
I just nodded into the microphone for everyone out there listening, just to show what professional level broadcasters we are. You hear my tiny brain rattling back and forth?
But to return to the topic at hand, which is games and something about septic systems, I guess. You know, I was alone in this cabin in Wisconsin. I'm playing League of Legends or whatever, and I'm like, I remember thinking to myself, why am I bothering with this? If the people involved are so awful and I'm not really enjoying it anymore. I can remember playing like flash games and tower defenses too and thinking, all I'm doing is avoiding doing other things that I don't feel like doing. Why don't I just do those things and get them out of the way instead and then do something I actually want to do? Like read this biography of Teddy Roosevelt or go to bed before midnight.
Tom's video games are what everyone else would seek to do something interactive and fun. A video game, perhaps. Tom instead reads presidential biographies and then forms opinions on them that he can never share with anyone else because no one else does that.
No one else has the extensive knowledge base of particular biographies that I do in order to have these conversations.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a source of great grief to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so games. But, like, you know, the other thing, though, is that we still enjoy games,
mm-hmm.
even with the completely septic, terrible people that you have to associate with in order to play them, oftentimes. If you want to play them with any other person, you're almost guaranteed. Like, if you were going to go and just look, be like, I want to share my enthusiasm for games with other people, probably, I'm going to go with 78% of the time, you're going to find some horrible neckbeard who's just going to say awful things, and he's just going to be mean and unpleasant and smell like cheese. And you're going to be like, I don't want to hang out with you in my free time. Like, I have stuff going on in my life that prevents me from wanting to spend time with you yelling at me about whatever you're yelling about. You slack-jawed, unshaven cretin.
Tom has feelings.
I have feelings about this subject. And you're like, I don't want to spend my free time with you. Why are you so awful? Why can't you be better? And this article gave me some idea of why somebody might become like that via, or not necessarily via, I don't think it's intrinsic to games. You could probably get that terrible through booze or the dank nugs, as the kids call them these days.
Well, so this is going to show just what a nerd I am and have been and ever shall be, world without end, amen. But this, like, toxic, septic, horrible gaming community, and again, not to say that everyone is, but you know they're out there. If you've played a game, you've met 10 of these people, even if there were only 3 other people in your game. And but so it takes me back to, like, what was it, middle school? When did the Xbox come out? Like, when did
it would have been when we were in middle school, maybe the very beginning of high school.
Yeah, and Halo, and I'm sure Bungie is a great company, and Halo has merits as a game somehow, but that was the shift between, like, video games being this thing that we who played them sort of hid, and only you only talked to the person who you already knew played video games. You know, you saw the guy with Game Informer or Nintendo Power or whatever it is, and you're like, okay, I can talk to that guy, but otherwise, people who play video games are to be shunned. And then Halo made the mainstream, or Xbox made the mainstream. Again, this is coming from where I was coming from, which was a time when Nintendo versus Sega was a thing, right? That was a war, a secret war of nerds who didn't want the people they went to school with to know, but a war nonetheless. And games went mainstream, which is good in some way, but it also allowed this sort of, like, jock, frat boy, the sort of person who would teabag another player. And I'm not saying this is solid science. This is where my upbringing and my experience of school and games led me to.
See, I don't know. Like you're not going to get any argument from me necessarily that the jockification of the first person shooter genre was in any way a good thing. But I don't know that it brought in the as I'm going to continue to call it, the septicism into the gaming community, as it were. Like, I think back to the young man I was playing Zelda, and I can remember some of these. I can remember feeling some of these things and experiencing some of these things, these self-inflicted wounds that this article discusses about how, you know, you're clutching to this power fantasy in the game because when you go to school or when you go out or when you do stuff, it's like it's just not working at all. You know, you weigh 90 pounds soaking wet and are really, really weird. You're not going to have a good time in middle school. And I can kind of remember that feedback loop. You know, you play a lot of video games because you're weird, and playing a lot of video games makes you weirder and makes you weird in ways that justifiably people are going to go, what the hell is wrong with you? Why are you like this? And it kind of, and I don't want to say you bring it on yourself, but to some degree you do at that point. And to some degree, people just start not being malicious. They start just leaving you alone because, well, he's a weird guy that doesn't want you to talk to him. Don't talk to him. And then years later, you're like, why does nobody talk to me? Why am I so miserably alone? It's like, well, you kind of built this over a couple of years of playing a shitload of Zelda, dude, and a lot of StarCraft, and just saying weird stuff all the time. Just constantly.
I know, I pretty much only talked to you in, what, fourth grade, because we both were the ones reading Star Trek books at recess.
Yeah, so it goes back further than middle school, certainly.
Yeah.
We were real cool back then.
We were so cool.
Yeah. But, I think the part of the point the article makes is that it's not... The community and the more vocal elements, I think, of gaming like to pretend it's something being foisted upon them by the normal society around them. But there's a lot of it that it's like you're just angry because stuff isn't going right in your life and games are your escape. And so when you see any kind of threat to them or any kind of criticism of them, you take it very personally.
So we could go on forever on this topic if we explore all of these rabbit trails. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to start another rabbit trail anyway. Are there other things that people do that? And like, you know, you mentioned alcohol, which... is sort of almost a useless alley to explore because of how different everyone's experience and use of it is, which maybe could be said of video games too. But are there other things that maybe pre-video games or outside of people who play video games that they do this with? You know, do people who are really into sports do the same thing? Do people who are avid, I don't know, runners or something? Like,
I'll bet you can find it. Like, I'll bet, and you know, I may have overstated the case too. It's probably not universally prevalent in gaming culture where you have, but it's a strong enough band that I think it's worth commenting upon. But you can probably find the sports fans, the hardcore football people, who feel like it's being more heavily criticized. Like, they've had this whole, I don't know if you've followed the stories about it at all, they've had this whole business with the concussions in football.
Mm-hmm. I haven't followed it much.
You know, it's pretty evident that if you line up a bunch of, you know, 400-pound men and have them beat their heads against each other, somebody's getting a concussion and somebody's getting significant brain damage over the course of a career doing that. That's gonna happen, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a lot of stuff about how, you know, should we have kids playing football? Should we be changing the rules so that they don't bash their heads as much? What do we do to prevent massive brain damage? Should the NFL have to provide health care for these people? Whatever. But you can find in the comment sections and in the op-eds and whatnot defending it, people who are very knee-jerkishly defensive of it. And it's like, no, you can't criticize football because football is my thing. It's what I do. And it seems to me like it's a similar kind of mechanic.
Well, as this is ostensibly partly board game related,
vaguely
podcast, how do we apply that to board games?
Well, I think
the obvious answer is that board games and people who play them are better and above criticism.
Podcast over.
The end. No, but really.
Yeah. Well, I think first up, just the behavior of board game players during the game has to be different necessarily because you're sitting at a table with each other. You know, we can always apply Professor John Gabriel's Greater Internet Squad Theory, which states that anonymity plus normal person equals total squad.
I'm surprised it took us almost 20 minutes to get to the Greater Internet Squad Theory.
You know, the good professor, he did fantastic. He's done fantastic work over the years. But so just having people at the table with you, that puts a tamper on the skepticism of the community quite a bit there. But you
not a damper, a tamper.
Did I say a tamper?
Yeah.
Is that? I mean, you can tamp down dirt in like a hole for a fence post.
Sure.
And so that's what you're doing to the bad behavior. You're tamping it.
I'm just saying you're wrong and I'm smarter than you. Carry on.
But even then, if you go to like the hobby shops and whatnot and hang out there, you go to the board game things. And I can say this as a person who used to hang out at hobby shops a lot.
Nerd.
I know, right? You'll still find it. You'll still find people that you're just like, what is wrong with you? Why are you so mad? And why are you so jumping upon this tiny thing and getting so worked up about it? And I've been that person too. It's great. It's not a good place to be in life. But I think the thing that sets board games apart is forcing you to be at the table with the people, and you're forced to interact with the game in a very different way. Like with a computer game, the computer is running everything. It's doing all the math for you. It's handling all of the balancing and the calculations and all of the stuff. All you really need to do is click and interact with it in a fairly prescribed way. Which can be very complicated and take a good deal of practice and skill and whatnot. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is that there's a huge amount, almost infinitely more going on behind the scenes than you will ever, in order to make that game happen, that the computer is taking care of, than you will ever do as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're playing Dominion even, which is not a complicated card game, you have to keep track of a lot of rules, a lot of stuff that's happening, a lot of things and events and possibilities and nuances, and you have to do, and the players at the table have to do all of that in their heads. They have to handle all of it. They might have tracking aids, you know, tokens and whatnot to keep track of certain values and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
but they still have to keep track of the way those values interact, the way everything functions. And so I think it raises a breed of cognition, as it were, or raises a way of thinking about things, a way of approaching it. It engages you in a way that discourages, I think, being a total fraud. And that might be not true, but I don't know what you think.
Well, I think if nothing else, the lack of anonymity, as though anonymity is a given until otherwise. That's the internet world that we live in.
Yeah, it's definitely an internet age.
That's
thing.
A weird kind of cultural realization to make. But that definitely makes a difference. I see your point sort of about the level of commitment to the game, but even, you know, and Dominion was a great example. I get to a point with Dominion where it's autopilot, and I get about as angry at various things in Dominion as I do in Mario Kart, which is the most anger-producing video game ever created on this earth.
Have we ever almost not been friends because of Mario Kart?
I don't think so. I think we've gone pretty close over maybe Smash Brothers back in...
I honestly can't ever remember playing Smash Brothers with you.
That's part of why. What was the GameCube one? Melee?
Yeah.
We played it once or twice, and this was like coming off of... having older brothers and trying to play Smash Brothers with older brothers is like taking everything that is bad about Smash Brothers and just... That's the only thing that is Smash Brothers now.
He had older brothers. I did not.
Yeah, that's so the case.
It's a very different
I love you, older brothers, but you're also better than me at video games. So, that sucks, and you should feel bad.
I think now that you say it that way, I think I overstated my point a little bit. But it is a little bit of a different.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from.
Table. And it's one of the nice. It's one of the things, honestly, I think is nice about board games as a thing to do. With people to kind of shift a bit away from the why are gamers terrible argument, because I really don't think that universally. I think we just have an extremely subset that makes the rest of us look bad. To more of a talk about board games and what we like about them. I like that when I'm playing a board game, it's a social event and I'm with people. I'm like, hey, look, I'm not the complete shut-in that people think I am. But at the same time, sometimes I can just fall silent and be thinking about my turn or my next move or whatnot, and that's just, it's just fine. You're just mm-hmm. quiet and you're just doing your next thing.
Right.
And you're still interacting because what you do is going to be impacted by those other people, but it gives that kind of order and structure, and it gives you outs when the conversation falls flat and that kind of a thing. And I really appreciate that about him.
Can I totally sidetrack this?
Yeah, sidetrack that.
So,
I should stop swearing.
You're such a horrible swearist, and I'm deeply offended. Okay, I'm going to double sidetrack because this is a great time to bring this up. We've talked about it before, but the idea that, you know, There was another podcast I listened to, the guy saying he took a poetry writing class and the professor taught him to write as though your parents are dead. Basically, don't pull any punches, don't do anything, or don't keep from writing anything that you're like, well, what if my mom read this? Or what if my dad read this? Would they be offended? Would they... And so the thought came to me, should we podcast like our parents are dead? And we're doing, I think, that a little bit with the swears and whatnot. But on the other hand, as we also discussed previously outside of the podcast, our moms are probably the only ones who are ever going to listen to this.
I don't know. If you told them that you had called them out for their greatness, your brothers might listen to it.
That's true. But they'll listen to this episode and then mock me for it forever, but never listen to another one.
No, true. Well, unless we should give them a shout out in every episode.
Oh, yeah.
That might work. That'll boost our readership to 3 plus 1 mother who is saying she listens to it, but is totally not listening.
Yeah. Our readership.
Did I say readership?
You did.
Fair enough.
But I
think, stand by my statement.
Yeah, all right. So anyway, the other sidetrack I was going for is, as we were kids, video games were sort of the things that, like, our parents kind of didn't get, because that wasn't a thing when they were our age. So they don't really have a comparison to make for their child. I mean, you know, comic books, reading, whatever, but things eventually, TV, things become, you know, normalized. You hear about these... articles written like in the late 1800s, early 1900s, people saying like children are spending too much time reading when they should be running around outside, you know, playing with sticks or whatever. So like, it seems like you can't win, but you'd think that board games would cross that barrier at least. And even if they're not interested in the games that you're playing, they would hit the like, well, this is something I would have done as a kid. You know, we played Monopoly or Sorry or whatever. And I kind of sort of labored under that delusion until New Year's, when we had a lot of board games and a lot of people our age playing them and a lot of parents being like, why don't you want to play a fun board game? This one looks weird and new and I don't like it.
What were we playing? We played what? Resistance and King of Tokyo.
Yeah, I've seen Resistance really weird out some older people because, like, even though it's effectively the same thing as bluffing in... So we played Coup, too.
Oh, that's right? True. Yeah, we did play Coup.
It's effectively the same thing as bluffing in poker or whatever. It's just bluffing, but since we... And I think this is probably personal to us and our group of friends, but we just love the mechanic of lying outright to one another because it's not a thing we usually do. Mm-hmm. So we tend to refer to it that way. So that's like how the game is pitched. That's the terminology we use. And then you're playing Coup and it's stuff like, I'm going to embezzle from the, you know, from the bank. We say murder instead of assassinate, you know? And so it's gone so far that I've seen weird out some people our parents' mm-hmm. age and more than a few things. King of Tokyo, they didn't find interesting at all. And yeah, they're just like, why don't you want to play a fun game? And we're like, this is a fun game.
We're having a blast.
But at the same time, like, can you imagine teaching it to one of your parents?
No. Like, I've thought about if I ever, the next time I go down to Texas to visit my siblings that live down there. Siblings? I guess it would be siblings now.
Sibling and sibling-in-law.
Yeah, I have my sister lives down there, and her husband is also there, and their tiny child.
Their spawn.
I've thought... God.
Okay, spawn. That's just a thing I say about babies. Nancy, if you ever hear this, please don't kill me. He's adorable.
He's a cute kid. I'm not a big baby person in general, but he's an all right kid.
Though you are a big baby.
No, you are the pile of babies in a trench coat pretending to be a person. But anyway, I've thought about like bringing the Resistance down because on the one hand, like the Resistance, when you coming from a perspective of I like complicated board games, mm-hmm. the more convoluted the better.
Right.
That's
why we love Arkham Horror and do like all Arkham 7 Horror. Expansions yeah, or however exactly. many we have.
You know, coming from I like complicated board games, the Resistance feels like almost easy mode. It's not. There's just not much there. The rules are straightforward. They're pretty intuitive based on the theme. It's not complicated. I thought I could teach this to my dad. My dad would be able to follow what I'm talking about. There's nothing too abstract or weird going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could teach this. But on the other hand, I'm like, this sounds like a good way to ruin Christmas. Like, I don't.
But a great way to ruin Christmas.
Like, that's a good story. But like, I don't need. It's not. Doesn't seem like a good idea to take a family holiday and have everybody sitting around lying to each other, just being like, no, I'm not a Resistance member. I'm not a spy. Seriously, I'm not a spy. I'm not a spy, Dad. Probably a little more than I should.
That was entirely too loud. Clipped.
I'm not a spy, Dad. But, you know, that kind of a thing. That seems like a bad idea. And same with coup. Coup isn't too complicated, but I can't imagine trying to treat it. You know what, actually? I taught Settlers of Catan to my dad and my sister once. And that was a lot of fun. I only ever persuaded them to play one game. Yeah, that was kind of fun. But you're right. It's even if they seem simple, the modern crop of sort of designer hobbyist board games are very hard to... They take a weird mindset to break into.
Yeah. Well, so actually, tying back into some of that vitriolic, toxic, whatever gaming culture on both sides of things, there are games that I don't play. And this is the flip side of that coin, like where with video games, you tend to be more affected by the toxic, other players being obnoxious. Not necessarily because you're, you know, thinner skinned or whatever, but because you put yourself in those places, and I don't.
I am considerably thinner skinned,
but
well,
it's
true.
It came from him, not me.
we measured one day.
So when you come to board games, you really thrive on, and I don't know that you thrive on competitive, but you like competitive a lot better than I do. Mm-hmm. So you thrive on games that are competitive, like Eclipse. Not necessarily because they're competitive, but because they have just a truly unnecessary amount of things and bits and pieces and mm-hmm. fiddly mechanics going on. But I hate that game not just because of the mechanics, because honestly, some of the mechanics are interesting. I think the combat mechanic is kind of broken. It could be better. But the thing I don't like about that is the outright everyone against everyone else mm-hmm. and the trickery. And it's the things that I like in Resistance, I don't enjoy at all in Eclipse. And it's like Risk. I think Risk is probably the like basest form of this style of everyone versus everyone game. I don't enjoy it because I think in part because it draws that out of me. Like if I were really to get into Eclipse, I would make some people cry. and I might have fun, but no one else would.
No one else would, right.
And that's not okay. And so instead, I don't have fun so everyone else can, but I need to avoid that style of game.
That's
even in board games, even if it's maybe especially face-to-face, mm-hmm. you know.
That's an interesting way to go about Eclipse, because I think you're right with that game, with competitive board games in general. Like, I like them better than competitive online games, first because the people at the table are forced by social convention and the fact that they want to be invited back to your house or mine.
To not say things about your mother or
right,
whatever.
Right, to behave themselves.
Sure.
To a certain human degree. But two, it's like, if I lose to you at a game of Eclipse and we're sitting at the same table, it's like, that's not a big deal. It's just, I was playing a game with my friend and it's done. For some reason, it's like, if I lose in an online game, it's like, no, that's a statement on my quality as a person.
An affront.
Yeah, I have failed on the world stage.
To my lineage.
Exactly. I have shamed my ancestors. Somewhere they are roaring in fury.
To all that have come before and will come after.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is stupid, but it's one of the differences. Like, it bugs me less to lose to somebody I already know well and I'm sitting at the table with than to lose to some random a-hole online.
Just as an aside, I realized yesterday as I was experiencing my Adderall wearing off and I was walking through the parking lot of a Walgreens that for no reason this sprung to my head. Dill hole is one of the greatest insults that there is. and it's got this brilliant, brilliant sort of cousin in dill weed, which you can use. And it's like a spice that you can cook with.
I was going to say, can't you also use dill weed, like, on your chicken?
Or, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it's for. It's for cooking and making a taste.
My spices boil down to garlic and seasoning salt. So,
awesome.
Not necessarily at the same time.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Like, I'm not good at other things
sure.
beyond those.
Yeah, my wife, well, I don't know. My wife might know. My wife might just say, dillweed sounds like a thing to put on this, and then it'll be horrible, and then we won't do that again.
My wife would know which recipes she knows that need dillweed, and would get a new jar of dillweed for many of them.
Yeah.
I shouldn't
make, each time.
Yeah, I shouldn't make fun of my wife on the air because I would like to not eat dog turd casserole.
You know, you've been trying to get dog turd casserole.
She won't
for
make it
years.
For me. Like, I have been an objectively unpleasant husband, specifically to get a hot dish of dog turd casserole.
You know, your problem is twofold. First of all, you don't have a dog, and so. She could maybe make you cat turd casserole with less effort expended, but the fact that you have outright told her that you are trying to get dog
That's
turd
fair.
Casserole makes it a less viable punishment
Do you
for
know what,
you.
Do you know what makes it even worse?
What's that?
She wants me to get her a dog. She wants a corgi real bad.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you don't have a microwave.
I don't. It's true. So I guess kind of the more philosophical universal point I was hoping to build toward with this whole business.
Because we're deep and meaningful people.
We're meaningful as because one of the points the Cracked article makes is that games in general, board or video, they don't matter. Like, they're not important.
You shut your whore mouth.
I know, right? It's like, and like when you're in hour 9 of a game of Eclipse, it's like nothing is more important. Like, you will do many horrible things, blasphemous, terrible things in order to win that game. But like, in the grand scheme of things, they're just not a big deal. In the scheme of your life, they're more a drain on your productivity and your ability to be a good member of society than anything. I guess I was wondering then, if this is all true, if there's so addictive and they're so not important and meaningless, and there's such a waste of time, I think he calls them in one of the paragraphs, to use the French pronunciation, why, like, what good is there that going on there? Like, what, why do we bother with games other than just to wait to fill the moments between our births and our deaths? What do they have any redeeming qualities, I guess, is my question.
I thought we were coming to an end of this kind of winding down, but you just opened up a whole new can of worms.
I never wind down, ever.
And you love worms, especially canned worms. They're so salty.
They put that salt on them in the kind of brine, and it's good. Like, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you can get them in, like, olive oil. Just Ooh. Worms and olive oil. Yeah, it's
doesn't sound bad.
It's real good.
My doctor says I have to cut back, though, on account of the blood pressure.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of salt.
Like, it is a lot of salt. It's a good source of protein, but
they put a lot of salt on those worms. Like, I wish they would release, like, a canned worm that didn't have quite so much salt on it.
Like a low sodium.
Yeah, yeah. Or not even maybe low, like half sodium even would be fine, probably.
I think what we've reached as a decision, as an answer to the question here, is that games clearly make you just a complete moron.
Just a real idiot.
We're just real dumb.
They just take your potential and they drown it like a puppy in a bathtub.
Or, you know, a worm in a can of olive oil.
But is there a good that comes out of spending all of your time moving little wooden cubes around a board? Like, is there something, has your life benefited aside from just, you know, some of the moments that you spent weren't filled with existential dread?
Well, I think that's actually in large part why it's worthwhile, and something I've been hearing recently that I've been glad to hear, because it's always been the case, but I think it's only recently being popularly or professionally recognized, is that so the way it's always phrased, I'm not going to claim this entire statement as objectively true, because it excuses a lot of things, like, you know, prostitution and serial killers, but anything you enjoy doing is not a waste of time.
Yes, let's excuse prostitution and serial killers.
And I'm not. So the idea is anything you enjoy doing is not a waste of time. As applied to video games,
I don't know that prostitutes necessarily enjoy their jobs.
No, I meant, you know, the people who avail themselves.
Oh, I get it now.
Of
okay.
The services offered thereby.
Let's go back to the aforementioned real dumb part that we brought
yeah.
up. Okay, I get it now. Please continue. Sorry.
So, I mean, what do you think about that? Anything you enjoy doing is not a waste of time. Again, within reason. Like, is this time that you spend playing board games, playing video games, is it worthwhile? You know, you could be using it to clean the bathroom. I mean, you could. And there's obviously a point where you are just doing it to avoid those things. But there's like a healthy balance there somewhere where you're like having enjoyment time, whether it's video games or reading a book or hopefully not being a serial murderer.
Ideally.
those things are worthwhile too, and you have to strike a balance. Otherwise, you're only ever going to be doing work, and you're going to be miserable, and you're going to destroy all life with a mechanical horror.
So you
won't even be able to do that because you won't have had time to build one.
You'll have been doing whatever you do all the time, unless your job is building mechanical horrors, and then really. But if you got that job, you probably enjoy it to some degree, so you're probably okay.
That seems like a stretch.
Yeah, fair enough.
But what do you think?
So the argument is kind of like, there's a certain degree of enjoyment out of life that is necessary, and fulfilling that need for enjoyment is okay in and of itself. I guess that makes some kind of sense to me.
I mean, is happiness important?
It's kind of a weird question, because you want to, the temptation is to say that an individual person's happiness isn't enjoyment, but if they're bringing happiness to a different person who isn't themselves, it is, which is kind of weird, right?
That's messed up.
It is. It's not like, well, when we do board game days at my house, it's like, it's not, that's good for me to be doing because it's giving other people enjoyment, but none of those other people should be enjoying it because they shouldn't be enjoying themselves, doing anything to make them. It's this kind of weird, almost like Puritan argument that
if you follow the logic all the way down, it gets messy pretty quick.
It does. Yeah. So, but it's something that I think we inherit from our noble forebears.
Just forebears.
Forebears. That was FOUR space BEARS.
Where we all came from here in America.
That's how America started. There
when
were four
they
bears.
Flew into the bear port.
There were four of them, and lo, but they did mount one another.
So anyway, enough mounting.
You're not going to let me go down that road.
No. We're done with that road. That road
Fair
is
enough.
Over.
But yeah, you know, if you allow that a certain degree of enjoyment that doesn't stretch into like the addiction we talked about earlier, or just mindless self-indulgence is not only acceptable but worthwhile and a thing you need to do, then yeah, board games scratch that itch, as it were.
Gross.
I know, right?
So I need you to come up with a simple set of rules that we can apply to all people without any outliers. For when they're allowed to have fun and when they aren't. And then we need to enforce these rules with an iron fist.
With a fist made of iron. I'll work on that.
I'm glad we came to this decision. Yes. What do you guys think? If you have ideas about why and how and just how much we are wrong and
I think it's worth bringing up here as you're inviting people to the comment section
to
of our video.
To heap vitriol upon
to
us.
Just upend a tub of garbage over our heads is that I cannot overstate how dumb we are.
We're real dumb.
We are stupid, stupid men. One of us more so than the other. I'll leave that up to you to decide. But we are deeply dumb. So if we're wrong, please, please let us know. If it turns out that board games are actually the foundation of what it means to be a person, then that's important for us to know. We should probably be aware of that.
And regardless of what you think, and we know you think we're dumb, but either way, you know, if you somehow have the same affliction that we do and you want to share in the delusion with us,
being a complete frickin' idiot,
hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming. We're just Mildly Alarming on Twitter.
I think
right?
We're just Mildly Alarming.
At Mildly Alarming. Or if you have many, many things to say about how wrong we are that take more than 140 characters, we can be reached at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Is this the end? Are we done?
No.
Okay.
But
good to bring up.
We haven't let them know yet, so I figured I'd drop it in.
Don't we
there.
Also technically have a website at mildlyalarming.com?
Yes, we technically.
In that we own the
web. That domain.
We own that domain, yeah, but we don't actually have anything there yet.
Not yet, but one day you may be able to encounter things such as this podcast and a comment section. Or a picture of a gorilla. I don't know yet, because nothing is there.
We do like gorillas. I think we're done with that first topic.
Yeah.
Can we move on now to something?
I suppose.
Other people want to, maybe a human would want to hear about?
I don't think we're ever going to produce any of that. But because, again, this is ostensibly a podcast somehow related to board games, and we used to spend up until we started trying to record this podcast, these evenings spitballing ideas at each other for game mechanics and just concepts that we've come up with. And in the interest of trying to keep the board game community a community and not just a bunch of people trying to keep their ideas secret because they want to make the money on it before someone else does. Side note, we have not made any money, and we're not entirely sure that there is board game money
now,
to be made.
Now, that's not true. I actually didn't tell you this part, but I stole $5 out of our friend Devin's wallet the last time he was at our house.
Yeah.
My house?
Good.
Not ours. We don't live together.
Yet.
Yet. So we actually, our profit at this point is that $5 minus however much we've spent printing and buying stuff.
And buying podcasting equipment.
Oh, crap, you put this on the card?
The card. So anyway, I had a game mechanic idea that popped in my head that we're going to kind of bounce off one another a little bit, or maybe I will bring it up and Tom will tell me immediately that it is dumb, and the podcast will end. And then if you guys have ideas, you can hit us up on Twitter or via email or not on the website because it doesn't exist yet. But yeah, so my idea that I got as I was... sweating profusely and breathing much more heavily than I am comfortable with. I went back to the gym for the first time after being sick for a week. And it was rough. But in trying to keep my mind off of the fact that I was physically abusing my body and objectively miserable, I sort of escaped into the ADD-osphere. And I had this idea for... a game mechanic, and I really haven't nailed it down, but whereby Wikipedia is an integral part of the game. And I could see a number of ways that this could work, because you could use it just, say, maybe we have a smartphone app that uses a random article, a random character, a random string of characters from a random article just grabbed from Wikipedia to artificially generate entropy that, you know, just from a really basic, boring, simplistic way takes... You could have a sort of dice-rolling mechanic that just uses that without having to know anything about actually generating random strings. Or you could go much more interesting, because that's probably actually a much more difficult way to generate entropy than existing code snippets or whatever.
Or just rolling a dice.
Or, well, but maybe you need a 1 in 357,000 chance. You know, maybe they don't make dice that big.
I'd buy one.
Yeah, I know you would. at any rate, but maybe like a trivia style game, or even a story driven game where you follow through Wikipedia articles and use the information from them in some way. The thing that really interested me is that Wikipedia, first of all, is just this gigantic repository of information, but also it is ever changing and always being updated. And so even if you somehow managed a playthrough that hit all the same articles, they might not be the same every time because they change. And if they're, you know, if they're current events articles, they're going to update really quickly. And if they're older articles, maybe they've been edited for content or for inaccuracies, even just for grammar, they're going to change somehow. So just that level of like real world, but not too real world, and like it's always different entropy intrigued me. So, you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, there's not. I mean, it's not really a game, but there's already a Wikipedia activity that I have read about.
Where you make up a completely fake article and see if you can get it past the.
Okay, there are two Wikipedia activities that I've read about.
It's where you only vandalize the article about giraffes.
Okay, there's three Wikipedia activities I've read about. And the third one is 6 degrees of Adolf Hitler, where you find a random article and you see how long it takes you clicking links to get to Hitler's article.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it was invented on 4chan.
Of course.
I think you would want to go with the more elaborate route, because, I mean, if you're just using it to generate entropy, I mean, you could do it more easily with the dice.
Right.
Or a deck of cards, or rock, paper, scissors. You know, my immediate go-to place is like a party trivia game, as you said.
Yeah.
I think to use it as a, not necessarily as a repository of information, but as a mechanic, you would you know, your temptation would be to use the random article, but I find that when I click the random article button, I so often wind up on the article about like a village in Poland that it's just like Polish word is a village in Poland. It has a population of 4 people. One time the Russians came, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Where there's just no information there, so there's not enough to make it. And like, there's just so many, there's, you know, there's however many million articles on Wikipedia, but so many of them are that kind of thing where it's just like, oh, wow. You know, the article on Tecumseh, Michigan doesn't have much in it. Sorry, people from Tecumseh.
Maybe if you edited your town's article, it would have more interesting information. People from Tecumseh.
Yeah. Did you guys ever think about that?
What are they, Tecumsites?
I think they're just Tecumsehs.
Huh. If you had like a mystery style game, like some elements of Arkham or like that other Wendigo game we were trying out, and somehow Wikipedia articles or elements thereof were clues. Toward the mystery, like I don't know. It could be that you have a specific goal in mind, so maybe your game book or cards or whatever only have a certain number of storylines or cases to solve, and so you are just using the information that you're gleaning from Wikipedia to solve the case, which would mean that it wouldn't probably make much difference. Those articles maybe won't change, and once you've played that, you kind of know what the answers are. But maybe not. I don't know. If you could make it dynamic enough that, I don't know, can you sub out sections of Wikipedia to choose random articles from? Can you say random article from geographical
Not that
locations?
I know of, but
Bummer.
the record will show that I don't know a lot of things.
It's a big record. I don't know why we bothered to write down the things you don't know.
We had to get a very large gramophone to play it.
So, that was my thought on that game mechanic.
Yeah, I thought I pondered it since you told it to me earlier in the week, but I didn't come up with anything good.
It's because you're dumb.
I know. To do with it. Didn't come up with much.
Well, this was less exciting than I had hoped it would be, but maybe someone out there on the internet will come up with a great idea
What up
for it
the
and get
internet?
fabulously wealthy, and we won't get anything for it. But that's great. If the game is fun and we get to play it.
And it costs less than $35 because seriously, board games are expensive,
they
dude.
Are expensive.
It's getting ridiculous, honestly.
So again, if you have thoughts on our stupid game mechanic and why we're wrong, or if you want to insult us or hurt our feelings in other ways.
If you would like to make me really mad about something else other than video games and force me to quit another portion of the internet. Please go to the comment
Or
section.
If you have something that you would like to hear us nonsensically drivel about for close to an hour, we're open to suggestions as well. Games that we haven't played, mechanics that you think we're capable of adding something useful to, which seems really unlikely. We are quite stupid. Again, hit us up on Twitter at mildlyalarming, on Gmail. mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com, or at www.mildlyalarming.com.
But don't go to www.mildlyalarming.org. That is actually owned by a slaughterhouse somewhere in southeastern Iowa. So you're gonna get a lot of dead pig.